Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at home this holiday weekend, and we wish all of you a very Merry Christmas. Today we open with the latest efforts in Congress to get a relief package passed before year's end to help the many who are struggling amid the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll also have news about the appointment of a new U.S. Senator for California and a new Secretary of State. Amid winter weather, before you light a roaring fire in that fireplace, we'll have some chimney safety tips today. Then hear about the latest presidential pardons, including former Congressman Duncan Hunter and his wife Margaret, and some local reactions to that news. From Public News Service, hear how some financial institutions are helping to invest in areas hard hit by the pandemic, and how you can help those efforts. Then we'll take a trip back in time to tell you about a Christmas Eve with the De Anza expedition hundreds of years ago, right here in East County. Next up, we'll have some holiday pet safety tips. And then from Public News Service, a report on a troubling rise in hate crimes. On Sounds of History, we'll share memories of a long-ago Christmas in Lemon Grove. And we'll have some holiday music, including a country Christmas medley from the U.S. Army Band and a performance of Vivaldi's Gloria by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. On Christmas Eve morning, House Republican leaders blocked Democratic legislation that would provide $2,000 relief checks to Americans struggling to stay afloat amid the coronavirus pandemic and economic crisis. The House Republicans also obstructed President Donald Trump, who urged that relief payments be increased from $600 to $2,000 a person, or $4,000 a couple. The president has threatened to veto coronavirus relief legislation if the benefits are not increased, although his own Treasury secretary had hammered out that deal with Congress. House Majority Leader Steny Hoyer asked for unanimous consent Thursday morning for an amendment that would increase the relief payments, but Republican Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, refused to allow the vote. In a statement, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says House Republicans cruelly deprived the American people of the $2,000 that the president agreed to support. She says House Democrats plan to hold a floor vote Monday on the Cash Act, which is standalone legislation that would boost those relief payments to $2,000. The Cash Act actually is expected to pass the Democratic-controlled House even without Republican votes, but it will face an uphill battle in the Republican-controlled Senate, where Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has repeatedly refused to consider House-passed coronavirus relief legislation for months. The bill that Trump has threatened to veto could leave 14 million people without any unemployment insurance, also ending a federal eviction moratorium that runs out at year's end. The bill also includes funding for vaccine distribution. If both houses can't agree on higher benefits, and if the president vetoes the current relief bill, Congress could override the president's veto, and it appears there may be enough votes to do that. Meanwhile, millions of Americans are left with mounting anxieties this holiday season, their futures at the mercy of Congress, with benefits set to expire in days.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
California will soon have a new U.S. Senator and a new Secretary of State, as well as a new Attorney General. With Senator Kamala Harris soon to be the new Vice President when Joe Biden takes office on January 20th, Governor Gavin Newsom has appointed Secretary of State Alex Padilla to fill the vacancy left by Harris and serve as California's new U.S. Senator. Padilla, the son of Mexican immigrants, will be the first Latino to represent California in the U.S. Senate and the first Southern California senator in nearly 30 years. To fill the vacancy in the Secretary of State office, Governor Newsom has appointed Assemblywoman Shirley Weber, whose district includes parts of San Diego and East County. The daughter of sharecroppers once denied the right to vote, She went on to earn a PhD and served as president of the San Diego Board of Education before being elected to the legislature. She will be the first African-American woman to serve as California's Secretary of State, ensuring voting rights for all Californians. Her appointment means a special election will be held to fill Dr. Weber's assembly seat. Now, since President-elect Joe Biden also tapped California's Attorney General Javier Becerra to head up the Federal Health and Human Services Department, assuming the U.S. Senate confirms that appointment, Governor Newsom will also have the opportunity to appoint a replacement to fill California's Attorney General position, but he has not yet announced who that will be. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Home heating fires caused over 48,000 fires last year, killing 500 people and causing $1.1 billion in damages. Most of those tragedies resulted from chimney fires, according to the National Fire Protection Association. With power outages resulting from SDG&E shutting off power to prevent wildfires during high winds, many residents in East County's mountain and rural areas have been relying on fireplaces or wood stoves to stay warm in winter weather. Others enjoy fireside family time during the holiday season. Before you light your next fire, listen up to these tips from the Federal Emergency Management Agency on how to prevent chimney fires. Clean chimneys don't catch fire. Have a professional chimney sweep inspect your chimney annually if you use the fireplace regularly, and get repairs done if needed. In addition to cleaning your chimney, the chimney sweep's inspection can spot cracks that could allow burning embers to escape into your attic, causing a fire. Chimneys expel the byproducts of combustion that include smoke, water vapor, gases, unburned wood particles, and more. As these substances leave the fireplace or wood stove and flow up into the cooler chimney, condensation occurs. The resulting residue that sticks to inner walls of the chimney is called creosote, and it's highly flammable. Buildups of creosote can cause a chimney fire. Restricted air supply and unseasoned wood encourage the buildup of creosote. To avoid that buildup, do not restrict the air supply by closing glass doors or failing to open the damper wide enough. On a wood stove, don't close down the stove damper or air inlets too soon or too much. Do not burn unseasoned wood. With a wood stove, overloading the firebox with wood in an attempt to get a longer burn time also contributes to creosote buildup. To keep sparks or embers from flying out of your fireplace and causing a house fire, keep a glass or metal screen in front of the fireplace. Don't burn paper in your fireplace or wood stove. Put the fire out before you sleep or leave your home. Put ashes in a metal container with a lid outside at least 3 feet from your home. Make sure a wood stove is at least 3 feet away from anything that can burn. If you have a gas fireplace, carbon monoxide poisoning is also a risk, so make sure you have a carbon monoxide detector in the room and make sure to change the batteries each year. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Brianna Gomez.
East County's former Republican Congressman Duncan D. Hunter won't be reporting to prison in Texas in January. President Donald Trump delivered an early Christmas gift to Hunter and other Republican allies, issuing pardons for their crimes. And a day later, he also pardoned Hunter's wife, Margaret. A staunch Trump supporter, Hunter pleaded guilty late last year to diverting $250,000 in campaign funds for personal use. But his prison term was delayed due to COVID-19 in the federal penitentiary near El Paso. He resigned in January, leaving constituents without representation for a full year that proved to be tumultuous amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Congressman-elect Daryl Issa, a Republican who won election in November to fill the seat vacated by Hunter, tweeted, "I'm pleased that all of the Hunter family can spend this Christmas together with a fresh outlook on life." But many others voiced outrage, even California Republican Party Chairman Ron Nehring, who tweeted that he opposed the congressional pardons, stating, "Our elected officials should be held to a higher, not lower, standard than the average citizen who would never have been pardoned for similar crimes." Democrat Amar Campanajar, who ran against Hunter in 2018 and against Issa for the vacant seat in November 2020, also condemned the pardon. He tweeted that Donald Trump would pardon the lawless, reckless, and shameful actions of Duncan Hunter is both disappointing and predictable. He said the pardon sets a dangerous example. Prosecutor Phil Halpern said prosecuting Hunter was worth the effort, though, despite the pardon, since the disgraced congressman ultimately did have to admit guilt and give up his seat in Congress due to his crimes. Hunter's wife, Margaret, recently filed for divorce against Hunter, who initially blamed her for the campaign finance violations, even though some of those misspent funds included trysts with Hunter's multiple mistresses, according to prosecutors. Margaret Hunter also pleaded guilty but received probation. Two other corrupt former members of Congress, Chris Collins of New York and Steve Stockman of Texas, also got pardons. The other two are currently serving prison sentences. Stockman was convicted of money laundering and fraud, and Collins pled guilty to conspiring to commit securities fraud and lying to the FBI. Trump also pardoned former advisors, including Roger Stone and George Papadopoulos, who served time for lying to federal investigators during special counsel Robert Mueller's inquiry into the Trump campaign's dealings with Russia. And in addition, the president pardoned four Blackwater security guards convicted of instigating a massacre and killing innocent Iraqi civilians, men that the U.S. Justice Department had aggressively prosecuted for their crimes. All were serving lengthy prison terms before the president pardoned them. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
During the holiday season, many people make charitable contributions, but there's another way to help the community recover from COVID-19 without spending a dime. Groups that work for social justice say you can make a difference by choosing a financial institution based on the causes they support. Ebony Perkins with Self-Help Federal Credit Union says there is power in where you put your money.
Placing your money with financial institutions that are making a difference in communities that are specifically hurting right now, that's also a form of giving, and that should not be overlooked.
Self-Help makes home and consumer loans where other financial institutions won't, specifically focusing on low-income, minority, and rural communities. They also offer certificates of deposit that support women and other underserved borrowers and tailor their federally backed paycheck protection loans to nonprofits. Barbara Bunn McCullough is CEO of Brighter Beginnings, which runs a child development center, offers financial counseling, and runs low-cost medical clinics in the East Bay. She says their revenue plunged during the pandemic and forced them to lay off 7 people.
But with the Paycheck Protection Loan, we were able to not only bring everyone back, but we have since added 20 more staff. We are growing and serving more people than ever before.
Rafael Morales, also with Self-Help, says the company advocates for policy change to benefit working families, especially in communities of color.
Our priorities around advocacy are expanding homeownership, criminal justice reform, student debt crisis, and living wage campaigns.
The goal of community development credit unions is to provide affordable financial services that help generate economic growth for communities that have been ignored by traditional banks. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
On December 24th, back in 1775, Juan Bautista de Anza's colonizing expedition from Spain spent the night in Coyote Canyon, an area that's now part of the Anza-Borrego Desert in Borrego Springs. Writer Dick Overturf penned these words about that ordeal. It was Noche Buena, Christmas Eve, in Anza's camp. It was cold, foggy, and rainy. Earlier, it had been snowing. Everyone and everything was wet. Babies were crying. Women were weeping. Dead cattle lay on the ground. Hundreds of horses, mules, burros, and cattle were milling around Maria Gertrudis Rivas, who was in labor. Few could sleep, and the mountain Cahuilla Indians were watching. Who were these intruders? The soldiers and settlers in De Anza's expedition had been on the march north from Mexico for 87 days when they reached Coyote Canyon, seeking the promised land at Mission San Gabriel. An earthquake struck that night also, rattling the group's composure amid the bitter cold. After Friar Pedro Font recited evening prayers or vespers, Colonel Anza distributed a potent brandy drink, aguardiente, to raise his soldiers' morale. Friar Font took offense, declaring that it is not right to celebrate the birth of the infant Jesus with drunkenness, to which De Anza replied, "I do not give it to them to get drunk." He insisted that the king had ordered the brandy for the soldiers, but warned that if any soldier was found drunk outside his tent, he would be punished. Friar Font later reported that the people that night were so noisy, singing and dancing from the effects of the liquor, not caring that we were in so bad a mountain in the rain, and so delayed with the saddle animals and tired cattle, but such is the rule of those absolute lords. This was not the first time Friar Font had scolded the expedition's commander. Just 1 week earlier, a fandango, or jubilant dance and feast, was held. The fandango at San Felipe, said Font, was somewhat discordant, and a very bold widow who came with the expedition sang some verses which were not at all nice, applauded and cheered by all the crowd. Now, at the Christmas Eve encampment in Coyote Canyon, after the celebration died down, the friar comforted a soldier's wife who had been in labor since the day before. She was fearful of dying, and I consoled her as best I could, he wrote. Shortly before midnight on Christmas Eve, the soldier's wife gave birth to a baby boy, who was christened Salvador Ignacio Linares. He was the third child born on the expedition, and the first white child born in California. A monument honoring the baby's birth on the eve of the Nativity still stands today, about 2.25 miles from Anza Ridge, near the San Diego County line. The day after the child's birth, the weary band of travelers rested before continuing on their way. Father Font delivered a sermon and then wished them all Feliz Navidad, or Merry Christmas.
It's time to deck the halls for the holiday season, but some holiday decorations can pose safety hazards for your cat or dog. So San Diego County's Animal Service Department is offering these tips to protect your pet. Keep pets away from mistletoe, holly, and poinsettias, since these are toxic to animals. Consider using artificial holiday plants instead. Chocolate is toxic to pets, so keep stockings with chocolate treats out of reach, as well as any chocolate cookies you might leave out for Santa. Anchor your Christmas tree so pets can't tip it over. Clear fishing twine tied to the top of the tree and secured to a ceiling or wall is a simple way to keep your tree standing and protect your ornaments too. Never use tree preservatives in water in your Christmas tree stand, since this can be deadly if cats or dogs drink it. Cats love to play with tinsel and curling ribbon, but then they'll try to eat it. Tinsel is toxic and ribbon can obstruct your pet's intestinal tract, so keep these items away from curious critters. Hide electrical cords from your pets and make sure they can't play with or knock over any candles. Many dogs and cats get overwhelmed with all the hustle and bustle of the holidays, so having a quiet room allows them to escape and sleep undisturbed. On New Year's Eve, loud booms from fireworks can scare your canine companion. Some dogs will jump over fences to escape the noise. They run for miles and become lost, so set aside a safe, quiet place and be sure your dog is wearing identification just in case. Microchip both dogs and cats, since they slip out the door unnoticed while you're busy greeting holiday visitors. And if someone finds your lost pet, a vet's office or shelter can scan for a microchip, and you can easily be reunited. County Animal Service offers low-cost microchipping every Tuesday through Sunday, which includes national registration. You can also sign up for Finding Rover and upload a photo of your pet using your computer or smartphone. This free service uses facial recognition to help lost and found dogs be reunited with their owners. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Chardé Fontenot.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory. Holiday traditions focus on hope, peace, and goodwill, but sadly, polarization has surged in the last 4 years. Hate crimes rose about 20%, according to a new FBI report, and hate-motivated murders, mostly done by white supremacists, spiked to their highest number in nearly 30 years.
What hate studies teaches us, we were sort of primed to see an us and a them.
Today, we're speaking with Ken Stern, director of the Bard College Center for the Study of Hate.
So people who may see the world that way can be seduced by white supremacist theologies when your identity is really tethered to an issue of perceived justice or injustice that you really crave, especially in that situation, to make the world simple, black and white.
Without the white nationalism words, like what you were describing,
sounds a lot like also people on the left these days. Yep. There's just a lot of polarization all around of us feeling like we're on the right side, everyone else is on the wrong side.
Oh, absolutely. I don't see it this as a as a monopoly on the right. I see it on the left too. And then you look at historically, there's been a tendency to see the world that way. And sometimes even to build conspiracy theories and structures around it too.
But of course, Stern talked about Trump's role in the rise of hate crimes.
And what Trump was doing was telling people that that instinct is right and to fear the them. And that's when you're trying to preserve the us, that's noble self-defense. That's not really hatred.
But the majority of Americans sent President-elect Joe Biden to the White House, who calls himself a uniter, not a divider. Stern says one place to combat hate is social media, and not just to curb its misuses.
I think we're using it not as effectively as we can to combat hate. So to give you one example from a couple of years ago, there was a white supremacist group that was threatening the Jewish community and the human rights community in Western Montana. One of the things that they had planned to do was to do an armed march to really amp up the threats that they were doing online to these folk. And we, with a bunch of partners, created something called the Project Lemonade Approach. So what we did was we got people around the world, really, to promise to donate an amount of money up to a limit that was associated with how long this prospective march would last. So the money would go to things that the marchers would have detested, like hate crime training for the police and anti-bias education and protection for the vulnerable people there that they were threatening. It gave people in the community there a sense that others had their back. And it gave people around the world who were concerned about this outrageous threat something that they felt that they could do. And it was all possible because social media allowed us to do that.
For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. It's the holiday season in warm, sunny East County. As we count our blessings, we can't help but think of those who also walked beneath that same benevolent sun years ago in somewhat less happy circumstances. One such person was Dr. Eben McGregor, one of very few doctors in East County in the 1930s, and the only game in town in Lemon Grove. Here are his words, written on Christmas Day, 1956, nearly 60 years ago. I awakened this morning thinking of my early days in Lemon Grove and of the dusty but very pretty little town as I first saw it. O little town of Lemon Grove, thousands of lemon trees, nearly everyone had a horse. Lots of people had asthma and had come here for the good climate. I thought of S.D. Eckler on Central Avenue, who came here with $30,000 and sunk it into land that was ruined by the Mattoon Act in the 1930s. Eckler started a huge rabbit ranch. Poor man took credit in the 30s so people could have rabbit stew. I recall Dr. Charles Good, the dentist, with a big citrus ranch and a nice house, also on Central Avenue. He fixed your teeth for a dollar in the 1930s. And good old Ed Fells, of the Fells Naphtha soap fortune. Not that he had any of that money. He taught me lobster fishing, completely illegal, and the ocean was cold in winter. I thought of that awful segregation case the school board started when they built the Mexican school, and then the Mexicans went on strike at the packing house. How the school board thereafter began to eliminate the Mexicans from the payroll. People like Andy Anderson, good people, Art Ahrens, Reverend Kurtz, and Herman Przybylski were part of that mess. Herman Przybylski had come here from Poland. He had a big citrus ranch and horses. He thought I was a communist because I had run for office on the Democratic ticket. I didn't know the meaning of the word communist in those days, But Herman had me investigated, and I will never forget when he came over and told me I was okay. We lived across the street from each other, for Pete's sake. I was his doctor, and no communist either. That reminded me of Herman's boy, Frank, who had terrible asthma and was good friends with the adopted son of Colonel and Mrs. Bryan, who lived in the big show place where Ambassador Hayes, later President Hayes, had visited. The adopted son was always tippling in the parlor and helping himself to the brandy during tea parties. But most of all, I remember Tony Sonka. He, who ran the famous general store next door to my home and medical office on Main Street, I remember saying to Tony, "Do you remember that truck that came through Lemon Grove on Christmas with flour and potatoes and somebody's old clothes and other stuff? It was all for the needy. You loaned us a little house to store the clothes. The Depression had struck so hard. I had several thousand patients who had no money. One month I worked from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, and I took in $86 in cash. Tony, you fed them, and I tried to keep them alive." Dear listeners, those were the words of Dr. Eben McGregor, who went on to lead the Veterans Administration for President Franklin Roosevelt in World War II. Dr. McGregor's house was designed by the great Alberto Traganza, also a Lemon Grove resident. That was in 1932, but it took 4 years to build because the doctor had no money, because his patients had no money. Patients with construction skills worked off their bills in sweat equity on the good doctor's house. It still stands today on Main Street, an important historic site. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County. This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
And we're going to end our show today, the last half of the show, with a performance of Vivaldi's Gloria by the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra. Merry Christmas to all of you from all of us at East County Magazine and KNSJ.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.